Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the DiaSorin Full Year 2016 Results Conference Call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Carlo Rosa, CEO of DiaSorin. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you, operator. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. I will make a few comments on the results that were achieved in 2016, and then our CFO, Mr. Petrone, will take you through the numbers. Well, first, let me comment the fact that results were extraordinary in terms of revenue growth and profitability, and the revised guidance and improved guidance that was provided in the mid-year in 2016 was actually met both in terms of sales growth and EBITDA. As far as profitability at 113 million euros and the cash flow over 130 million euros, this established a new record for the company. In that consideration, the board of directors has proposed a dividend of 0.80, which is a 23% increase over the dividend that was paid by the company last year. Now, before we talk about the business, I would like to make a comment regarding the three-year plan, which is well due. The company will schedule a three-year plan presentation for the last week of June. In that meeting, we are going to give lots of color about our molecular strategy and our immunoassay strategy for the next 3 years. Everybody is going to receive a save the date for one of the days in the last week of June. Now, if I may start commenting the business, I would like to start with molecular. Let me remind you that the molecular business today does represent roughly 75% of the total revenues that provided by the focus business that I remind you was bought from Quest in May last year. The molecular business is growing in North America, which is mainly today in North America, is growing double digits as expected, and we continue the expansion of the business in the hospital setting in the U.S. If you remember, when we discussed about this acquisition, we saw two strategic elements of this. One was to allow DiaSorin to better penetrate the hospital market in the U.S., allowing molecular and immunoassay to go together, because we believe that our platform, also for immunoassay in the U.S., can benefit from this success. The other opportunity that was provided was the fact that the focus business was mainly U.S.-driven, whereas DiaSorin, having a network, a commercial network throughout the world, can really take this business and expand it outside the U.S. To that regard, we have initiated, and I think we are halfway in transferring the business from the current ex-U.S. distributors that were used by focus to the DiaSorin subsidiaries. We have completed, actually, end of last year, the acquisition of the Australian business that was fairly relevant in Australia and was transferred to us with some of the personnel from the distributor. Starting January this year, we are direct in Australia, and we are concluding similar deals in Europe and in Israel with the intent by June of this year to have pretty much under control the distribution of molecular throughout all the main geographies. As far as new product development is concerned, We are clearly investing in research and development. Let me remind you that when it comes to our molecular franchise, the R&D investment is close to 15% of total revenues, whereas traditionally our immunoassay franchise, we have spent between 4%, 5%, 6%, depending on the years, in supporting that business. So clearly it's a different scale, but by the same token, it's a different reward vis-a-vis the growth. And in that regard, we launched the first product, which is a C. diff assay. We launched it in Europe in Q4 and was recently approved by the FDA in February, so we also launched it in the U.S. market. And so we continue, I would say, the success in research and development that has been the history of this company, one of the reasons why we decided to buy, invest, and get this technology from Quest. As far as the rest of the business, there are two opportunities I would like to underline. The first one is Zika. As you know, we have been awarded with financial support and political support by BARDA in the U.S. to develop a Zika kit for the liaison for the U.S. market. We have submitted as IUO the product. And we expect that the product is going to be approved in quarter one this year, so we expect that after quarter one we'll be able to introduce Zika to U.S. customers. Let me remind you that today in the U.S. There is only one ELISA product approved for Zika, and there is a molecular product approved for Zika. And so there is high demand by labs in the U.S. to have an automated solution, because there are some volumes are developing, and certainly there is volume concentration in some of the big labs, because from the periphery, so from the small hospitals and from the small labs, everything is funneled through the very large labs where DiaSorin is traditionally present. So we expect that Zika will provide DiaSorin with a growth opportunity starting from 2017. The second point I would like to discuss has to do with the Beckman Alliance. Has been a great success for us in China, as an operating relationship with Beckman, allowing us to cover the segment, the growing segment of the very large Class 3 hospitals in China, which require automation. And by the same token, we have announced that the same relationship has been established for the U.S. with a co-investment to take the DiaSorin products through the FDA. And we are in the process of preparing the clinical studies and conducting clinical studies in order then to file for the FDA, to the FDA, for approval of the full hepatitis line. So to me, this is a strategic move, because it would have been difficult for DiaSorin to reach the U.S. market, or the opportunity of the U.S. market for hepatitis HIV, which I remind all of you, excluding the blood bank business segment, which is fairly unique, is close to $500 million. So the fact that we do have an alliance with Beckman will allow us to certainly a faster penetration to that market. Now, if we go back to what happened in 2016, and how things are developing in Q4 last year for in terms of different geographies, I think that we continue to experience trends that we have seen in the past with some good new elements of growth. As far as Europe, notwithstanding the fact that we discussed that Italy continued also in Q4 to be weak, we experienced a 4% decline in revenues in Italy. Notwithstanding that, Europe continues to grow 5% per year, which is, in my opinion, a tremendous result considering the level of consolidation that is happening in Europe. France, after we took a hit on vitamin D in 2015 and 2016, the business stabilized. And I remind you that the hit in vitamin D was related to a change in reimbursement in France. And now France is a net contributor to growth again. for the group. In part, supporting the decline of the Italian market. As far as the U.S. is concerned, we see overall relatively small growth, plus 1% year on year. And as you know, it's a combination of strong double-digit growth of the Clea XD business and decline of the vitamin D franchise for reason we've been historically discussing, and they're always the same. It's pretty much has to do with continuous price erosion, which we continue to see. Overall, our vitamin D franchise globally has declined around 4% in Q4, and this is in line with our expectations. We discussed this in previous calls, and in line with the 3-year plan that we presented in 2015. So no surprises as far as vitamin D is concerned. As far as XD, so all the other products with our Clea Liaison technology, we registered a growth overall of 13% in Q4, 11.5% back to double-digit growth. We have some, we do see strong growth coming from some of the emerging countries, including China, which today represents close to 10% of our overall revenue with growth of 30% year on year. So it's phenomenal results. But by the same token, all these products are really today are becoming relevant also in the U.S. because of the success we had with strong alliances in the past with the very large labs. And I think we are progressing quite fast in developing our Clea XD business also in some of the very large U.S. laboratories that were missing to our list. And we believe that in 2017 there will be an opportunity in the U.S. to consolidate this Clea XD business also in one of the largest accounts that today we're not serving in the U.S. So I can see lots of traction for the XD business in the U.S. As far as Asia Pacific, with overall growth of 13%, with a phenomenal result that come from China, where we are now close to 1,000 systems installed. I think last year for China was a record year. We installed almost 200 systems as a combination of Liaison and Liaison XL. And we see now the Liaison XL being extremely successful, not only in the Class 3 hospital, but also in the Class 2 and some of the Class 1. And this is fundamentally due to the fact that volume has been increasing so dramatically in this, even in the periphery, in the smaller hospital, that the business is big enough now to sustain placement of Liaison XL. And this clearly increased the base of potential customers by 5,000 hospitals, which we clearly plan to attack in the next years. Last but not least, we have been discussing in the past about the poor performance of Brazil, and interestingly enough, Brazil is back to growth and to double-digit growth. And this is has to do with the fact that we retrenched, we limited our business to private accounts, accounts that today are not dependent from the public system. And as a net result, we're developing a very hefty business with a very hefty DSO, so we also collect the money. And this clearly is making of South America now growth engine again. We, I think, commented already about Mexico. Mexico, even if for us is a relatively small business, although we were awarded by a very large tender that has allowed the company to penetrate the blood bank business, and we believe that Mexico very soon can reach finally a size of around 10 million euro for us, so it becomes a significant business comparable to some of the European subsidiaries we have. But with a growth rate clear that is dwarfing what we see in the more consolidated European market. Last but not least, when it comes to the results, placements, we place net of 520 systems last year, with an excess of 570 Ilias on Excel. And clearly, we are withdrawing some, or let me say, substituting some of the liaison that are coming to obsolescence, where we are not actively promoting any longer the liaison business, but every time we have a chance and the system are obsoleted, we do introduce the liaison Excel in waiting for the launch of the liaison Excess. As you know, is a small platform that we envision to be available to the market in 2019. As far as the liaison Excess, we are today working with the prototypes we have received from Stratec, so we feel that the project is in line to our expectation, and we expect CE marking and launch in 2019. And last but not least, new guidance for 2017. We expect the business to grow at constant exchange rate at 11%, both for EBITDA as far as revenues. So now I will leave the podium to Mr. Pedron, and he's going to take you more carefully through the numbers. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlo. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. In the next few minutes, I'm going to walk you through the financial performance of DSR during 2016. As usual, I will also make some remarks on the contribution of the fourth quarter and on the impact of the focus business, whose acquisition has been completed in mid-May 2016. Let me please start with what I believe are the main highlights of the period. As we saw, DSR has closed the year meeting its guidance, with a growth in revenues like-for-like at constant exchange rate of 6.4%, the guidance being between 6 and 7, so very close to the midpoint, and with a growth in EBITDA like-for-like at constant exchange rate of 9.7%, again the guidance at around 9%, so slightly better. We have delivered a reported full-year EBITDA of €217 million, with an EBITDA margin of 38.2%, which is 110 basis points better than 2015. To me, this has been the result mainly of two factors. On one side, our ability to offset the price pressure suffered on some mainstream products with more sales of high-value specialty products, such as vitamin D125 and the stool panel test. On the other, our constant efforts aimed at delivering manufacturing efficiencies and operational leverage through a tight cost control. Lastly, the DSR has confirmed its ability to generate a predictable and strong free cash flow, €132 million in the year, with a growth of 22% compared to 2015. Which allowed the group to close 2016 with a positive net financial position of €71 million, after having completed the acquisition of the focus business for about €260 million. Let's now move to the P&L. 2016 revenues, as reported, at almost €570 million, grew by 14%, and as said, 6.4% at constant exchange rate and scope of consolidation. Focus contribution to this growth was €44 million. Differently from the first 9 months of the year, in quarter four, we didn't experience any material FX headwind. The appreciation of the US dollar and Brazilian reais against the euro almost completely offset the depreciation of the Chinese yuan, the British pound, and the Mexican pesos. Moving now to the full year 2016, we have recorded a negative FX headwind for about €6 million, mainly driven by CNY, so the Chinese currency, GBP, Mexican pesos, whereas the US dollar, which is the main foreign currency to which the group is exposed, has been overall flat year on year. Let me remind you also, to better understand the guidance, that after the Focus acquisition, an appreciation of the US dollar of 1 dollar cent against the euro means for the group, on a yearly basis, about €2 million more sales. Gross profit, just a touch below €390 million in the full year, grew by almost 14%, or €47 million compared to 2015, closing the year with a ratio of revenues at 68.4%, in line with 2015, in spite of the slightly dilutive effect of the focus business. To me, this is the result of higher sales of specialty products on one side and some positive effects from manufacturing efficiencies on the other, which completely offset some price pressure on clear mainstream products, as we said, vitamin D, which is anyway in line with our expectations, and which also offset the higher one-off scrap and rework costs we discussed about in quarter three. 2016 total operating expenses at about €207 million, or 36.4% of revenues, have increased by about 15% at current exchange rate compared to 2015, whereas the growth at constant exchange rate and scope of consolidation is in line with our expectations and very close to 4%. Let me please remind you that about €8 million of the reported OPEX growth has been driven by the depreciation of the intangible assets, mainly know-how and customer list, coming from the focus business acquisition. Net of this depreciation, the reported 2016 OPEX ratio on revenues would have been 35%, against 36% of 2015. This is the result mainly of the operating leverage on the like-for-like business and of a lower OPEX ratio coming from the focus business. Finally, as said in the previous quarter, the increase in R&D expenses, which grew in the year by almost 44%, has mainly been driven by the depreciation of the intangible we just commented and the change in perimeter. Year-to-date, other operating expenses at €9.3 million have been negatively impacted by €5.4 million of non-recurring expenses, mostly driven by costs associated to the focus business acquisition and to some one-off consultancy costs aimed at streamlining our supply chain processes. Besides, Q4 16 has been hit by a one-off cost of about €1 million, related to a reorganization carried out in our Italian company, whose positive effect is expected from 2017 onwards. 2016 EBIT at €172.6 million, or 30.3% of revenues, has increased compared by 2015 by 13.6%, or about €20 million, with a ratio of revenues a touch north of 30%. Full-year EBIT ratio over revenues, excluding the mentioned depreciation of the focus intangible, would have been 31.7% compared to the 30.5% of 2015, so an increase in profitability. Coming now to the tax rate. 2016 tax rate at 33% is in line with how we closed 2015. However, it is worth underlining that 2016 has been negatively affected by tax settlement reached in Italy related to some tax claim covering the years between 2011 and 2014, and by the reduction of the deferred tax assets coming from the lower tax rate that will be applied in Italy starting from 2017, when corporate income tax rate will move from 27.5% to 24%. So, net of these settlements, 2016 normalized tax rate would have been 31.9% against the 33% of last year, which means 110 basis points less than 2015. This variance is mainly driven by the different contribution to the taxable profit of the group of the geographies in which we do business. 2016 net results at €112.6 million, or almost 20% of revenues, is higher than previous year by €12 million, or 12%. As expected, the focus business has positively contributed to the absolute value of the net result of the period. Lastly, year-to-date EBITDA at €117 million, with a ratio of revenues of 38.2%, is better than last year by €32 million, or 17.5%. The variance at constant exchange rate and scope of consolidation is positive by 9.7%, as we said. Quarter 4 2016 EBITDA at €59 million has increased compared to last year by 21.4%, whereas the increase at constant exchange rate and scope of consolidation has been positive by 6.5%. It is worth mentioning, though, that this quarterly variance has been affected, as we said, by the €1 million non-recurring expenses booked in the Italian subsidiary. Now moving to the net financial position and the free cash flow, we see that in spite of the acquisition of the Focus business completed in May 2016 for about €262 million and the conclusion in June of the treasury shares buyback plan for almost €14 million, DSR closed the period with a positive net financial position of €71 million and €130 million in cash. This is confirming again what we discussed in the previous quarters about the ability of DSR to generate a predictable and strong cash flow. During 2016, the group has generated, as we saw, €132 million free cash flow compared to €108 million of 2015, with an increase of €25 million or 22%. And once again, the Focus business continues to contribute in a positive way to this growth. This is all on my side. Now, let me please turn the line to the operator to open the Q&A session. Thank you.
Excuse me. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. The first question is from Massimo Vecchio of Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. I have a question for Carlo on the growth of the Clea business. If you can detail between vitamin D and ex-vitamin D, probably going through the drivers, just try to understand better where the growth will come from in 2017. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Massimo. The growth in 2017, in my opinion, will come from a geographical point of view. Will come from two geographies. One is the U.S., and this is because, as I stated previously, we feel very comfortable with the fact that in the U.S. in 2017, we will be able to expand our business in Clea XD with one of the largest labs in the U.S. We've been working with this lab for a long time with our flagship product, vitamin D, and I think this is paying off in terms of reputation. The fact that Liaison XL is a very good platform for them, as we saw also with other very large labs in the U.S. And so I expect that in the U.S. there's going to be an acceleration for the XD because of this. I also expect that we will continue to see success from China, and mainly driven by the fact that in the Chinese market there is a very large pool of business today in still in infectious disease and hepatitis, which is still conducted using ELISA. And this is one of the is a very unique situation compared to all the rest of the world where there has been a cannibalization of this technology a long time ago. And the reason why ELISA is still standing there but does have a short life is the fact that there used to be local manufacturers making ELISA. These local manufacturers, some of the small ones disappeared, and that business has been consolidated in few remaining ELISA companies. But the labs, because of the of the volume growth cannot use this technology any longer. And so, just to give you an estimate, we believe that as far as hepatitis and TORCH infectious disease, which is our bread and butter in the U.S., almost 70% of the market is still ELISA and is very rapidly converting. And that to us is a great opportunity because we discussed many times in the infectious disease arena, we do have a reputation in China to build a reference technology. And because of that, we were able to pretty much install our install base of Liaison first and then Liaison Excels. And I continue, I see that trend, honestly, to continue. On top of that, what I think is very interesting as far as China is concerned is the fact that there is an emerging segment of the market which did not exist before, which has to do with private labs. If you remember, we have always been discussing about the opportunity in the hospital segment, but it's certainly true that the Chinese government is pushing the development of private labs, and this has to do with the fact that private labs would alleviate smaller hospitals that today see the surge in volumes to take care of this volume using the opportunity to send some of the of the assays that they need to do directly with the private labs. And traditionally, Diasorin does have, as we have proven in Europe, in Australia with Sonic, and in the U.S. with LabCorp and Quest, we do have the platform, the service, which can fit that market. So that makes me comfortable with the fact that with our CLIA XD business in China, we can continue to see growth. Last but not least, I did comment before on Brazil, which you know, Brazil is a hate and love situation. I think we went through a couple of years where we hated the place because it was complicated and because of devaluation of currency and because of the fact that the government was not paying. But at the end, I think we are back into a positive cycle from what we see, and this is because of the fact that we shifted our attention from the public to the private. And there is a hefty private business to go after, and again, the success there has to do with our infectious disease franchise. So all in all, I believe that there is room for growth in all geographies when it comes to the CLIA-XD. And particularly, as said, in the U.S., where we do see tremendous opportunity with this product. Thank you.
In the follow-up, if I may, in the context of what you said on ELISA, is the say product that you get through the Focus acquisition helping you meaningfully, or is not that relevant?
No, what we bought from Focus, again, for us, ELISA is a target, typically. What we bought from Focus, which is a very specialistic ELISA, because they have some funny bugs like West Nile, like Cross River, like dengue, we do see some of the some opportunity in the remote areas, especially in East Asia and some in Australia. However, we do see, we are pursuing today a strategy to very rapidly cannibalize the business, ELISA business, that we can cannibalize from Focus using our Excel and CLIA technology before somebody else does it, and this is especially true in the U.S.
Thank you very much.
The next question is from Scott Bardo of Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much for taking my questions. So first question, please, relates to North America and what appears to be abnormal or relatively pedestrian growth in that region. I think you talked a little bit about vitamin D pressures in that region. So could you please be a little bit more explicit for us and help us understand, of your total North American business today, what is vitamin D actually? And are you still seeing volume growth in vitamin D in North America, or are we in overall sort of decline situation now in North America. And just extending upon the sort of broader vitamin D comment, I think at your Capital Markets Day, if I'm not mistaken, you highlighted expectations for some revenue stability. I think you were expecting a couple of percentage points growth over the forecast period. Obviously, we're in a situation where we're now declining on a quarterly basis. So I just wondered if you could give us some sense as to where you see this sort of revenue impact, volume revenue impact for vitamin D that we should be modelling. So that's the first question, please. The second question is actually a little bit more of a financial one related to Mr. Padron. I wonder if you could comment a little bit more on the margin expectation for 2017. It appears that you're baking in some sort of margin stability rather than any progression. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about as to how you see that, whether, you know, it would appear to me that given, you know, your expectations for broader menu in North America, specialty tests and some molecular tests, there might be some room for further gross margin expansion. I don't know if you see that to be the case. And also, given that you have maybe $9 million in one-off costs impacting your EBITDA this year, it seems to me that in the absence of those next year, you should be able to grow slightly higher than revenues, all else being equal. So if you could just give us some sense of what's baked into your margin expectation, please. Thank you.
Scott, I'll take the vitamin D question. And then Pier Giorgio is going to cover the margin expansion in 2017. Look, we always stated, including the capital, when we had the Capital Market Day, that vitamin D at constant exchange rate, so the business, would have slightly declined. And we explained back then that net the effect that we were seeing, which was fictitiously stabilization, was related to the assumption that was made at the time on the exchange rate. And Pier Giorgio is going to elaborate on this. If you want to understand from a business perspective how vitamin D is doing in the U.S., well, volume, interestingly enough, the volume we see is still increasing, and is increasing, you know, low double digit, the true volume increase. We would see more increase, and this would be artificial, related to the fact that the two very large accounts we have, Quest and LabCorp, are buying businesses. And so every time they buy business for us, it can be good news or it can be some of a good news. It is a good news if the business that they buy was actually running their vitamin D on a completely different platform. And this would be overall an increased revenue contribution and an increased volume contribution. It would be kind of a good news if they buy a business that is using our own technology, because when they buy that lab, yes, we pretty much use, you know, it's neutral from a volume point of view, but it's detrimental from a price point of view, because as you can imagine, the price that we provide vitamin D to Quest or LabCorp is not necessarily the same price that we provide to smaller labs or hospital labs around the country. So is moving parts and is a complicated puzzle. But overall, if I may, I believe that vitamin D in the U.S., notwithstanding the fact that it's a highly penetrated, very highly penetrated market, continues to grow single digit. And this is to do with the fact that more and more and more vitamin D is associated with physical testing, well-being, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, you can open newspapers left and right and continuously they talk about how good is vitamin D for you. Okay. As far as what percentage it represents of our U.S. business, we will never disclose it. And I'm not going to disclose it because for competition reasons, right? Everybody really wants to understand that, and we have been hiding that as a secret. It's a good portion of the business, but it's getting diluted more and more by the day, by the fact that the CLIA XD business has been growing 20% in the last few years. And as said, we expect strong growth in 2017 because of this opportunity that we believe will present early this year for our U.S. Company. Now, I'm going to leave then the margin discussion to Pier Giorgio, and also please, if you can comment on the vitamin D artificial effect.
Hello, Scott.
Hello.
So for 2017 gross margin, we don't provide a specific guidance on gross margin, obviously. Nevertheless, I'm expecting to see some pressure on gross margin in 2017 coming from three main elements. On one side, again, we see an underlying price pressure on mainstream products. If you remember, we quoted in the last 3 years plan, we said vitamin D 3-5% and CLIA XD 2%. So that is going to hit our margins. On the other side, the country mix. We said China is growing very, very good for us. We said that we're going to see some material growth in CLIA XD in North America coming from big labs, which usually have a price which is lower compared to our average selling price. And so this is somehow going to, you know, put our gross margin under pressure. And last but not least, we're going to see in 2017 one full year contribution of DSR in molecular sales, whose gross margin ratio over revenues, as I said in the previous quarters, is slightly below the one of the immuno business. So as a combination of these three elements, we're going to see some pressure. At the same time, I'm also expecting some of this pressure to be offset by manufacturing efficiencies that we've been able to deliver so far, material ones, as happened in 2016, and by a more operating leverage coming from our tight cost control, with the net result of delivering an EBITDA ratio over revenue in 2017, which I believe is going to be very close to what we achieved in 2016. So to summarize, EBITDA ratio over revenues in 2017, very close to 2016 as per our guidance, still with some pressure on gross margin for the elements I told you, which is going to be offset at the EBITDA level by operating leverage and manufacturing efficiencies. Going to the vitamin D and to our 3 years plan, you know, we were in a situation when we released the plan when the U.S. dollar was, if I well remember, at 133. So it would have been kind of goofy for us to do a plan at constant exchange rate. Since such a material part of our revenues is determined in U.S. dollar, we would have projected very funny numbers. So we said we made an assumption about the exchange rate, and we incorporated in the guidance, in the 3 years guidance, the impact, the positive impact from coming from the exchange rate. But at the same time, we said the underlying business of vitamin D, as I said, also because of the price pressure of 3-5% was slightly flattish or slightly negative. What we are going to do for the next plan is to to put a plan at constant exchange rate so that it will be easier for everybody to understand the 3 years guidance. So taking out of the table the effects effect.
That's very clear, thank you. And maybe just one quick follow-up, if I may. All of the reasons you mentioned for gross margin pressure in 2017, they sound a little more structural than one-off. I wonder, do you see this as a sort of a new trend as to sort of continued ongoing gross margin pressure from these sort of high levels? Or is there some sort of compensatory effects with volume and mix that you've enjoyed in the past last part of that question, please. I don't think you provided any tax guidance or tax rate guidance this year, and I appreciate there's a lot of moving parts with the Italian patent box, but please can you share some thoughts actually as to the potential benefits to your bottom line resulting from tax? Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So talking about the gross margin, you know, we will let you know more when we will do our investor day with the 3 years guidance. Said that, yes, there is an underlying price pressure, but at the same time, we are helped by the volume mix effects you were talking about. We sell more and more of our specialty products, high-value specialty products. Prices of vitamin D125, H. pylori, calprotectin is much, much higher than mainstream products, and that is kind of helping us to offset the price pressure on the mainstream product. Talking about the tax rate, we don't provide guidance about tax rate, but what I can tell you is that by all means, we are going to have a positive effect coming from the reduction of corporate income tax in Italy. As I said, you know, we have two main countries when it goes down to, you know, to how much we pay in taxes across the group. And those countries, obviously, are the countries where we have our manufacturing sites, the biggest manufacturing sites, which is Italy and U.S. If we think about Italy, I mentioned that the corporate income tax rate has been reduced by 27.5% to 24%. At the same time, some other tax deduction, which had been granted until 2016, has been reduced. But the net effect for us in 2017 is, I would say, a saving in terms of taxes of about 2 million euro. So again, I'm expecting a saving coming from Italy of about 2 million euro. On top of that, as I believe I mentioned in previous call, we also applied in Italy for the patent box. The patent box is an elective tax regime that grants us a 50% tax exemption on income derived from a direct exploitation of qualified IP. We applied in 2015. We just started discussing with the Italian tax authorities about that. We will have a rollback if we will be able to finalize the discussion by 2017, so in this year, as we hope, we're doing our best, but it's not, you know, it doesn't depend completely on us. We will see this year, in 2017, a nice effect because we will be able to book in our accounts the positive effect coming from 15, 16, and 17 patent box. And this without considering, you know, the potential tax reform in the U.S. Give or take, if there is a 1% tax reduction in the U.S., tax rate reduction, that means for us, again, ballpark number, $1 million less of tax bill. So if you combine the potential tax reform in the U.S., the patent box that we applied for in Italy and the reduction of the tax rate that it's a given, you know, it's a law in Italy, I'm expecting in 2017 the tax bill to be, you know, materially lower than what we had in 2016.
Very clear answer, and maybe just for very quickly. So if I understand, or all going well, if you manage to leverage all of these potential tax benefits, is a sustainable high 20s rather than low 30s tax rate a sort of ballpark? Can you at least give us some flavour as to where you see the potential? That would be helpful.
You know, in 2017, you're going to have a one-off effect, right? Because you're going to have the patent box effect of 15, 16, and 17 all hitting one single year.
Yeah.
So if you take out that of the table, otherwise you really don't have, you know, a sensible benchmark. I would say, you know, around 30%, let me say, give or take.
Wonderful. I'll jump in the queue. Thanks for answering my questions.
Thank you.
The next question is from Alex Cogut of Kempen. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Just a quick one on the Liaison XS. Could you give a quick update on development and expected launch? Thank you.
Yes, as we have discussed when it comes to the excess, we are now in the phase where Stratec has delivered the prototypes to us. So we have them in the research center. We are conducting testing and validations, and we expect the Liaison Excess to be CE marked with an initial menu of products in the infectious disease for 2019.
And if I can follow up on that, I believe the previous guidance was launched 2018, if I'm not mistaken. What is causing the delay?
I think that what we said is end of 2018. So, yeah, we can say, if you prefer, end of 2018, beginning of 19. What I'm saying is that we don't expect this system to have an impact in 2018, but to start to have an impact in 2019.
Got it. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from Maja Pataki of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Most of it has actually been answered already, but I was just wondering if you could give us a bit of a breakdown or a bit of granularity on the top-line guidance for 2017. Are you expecting to see, apart from the full-year consolidation of Focus, but are you expecting to see a significant acceleration in Focus sales, or should we expect a bit of a slowdown in the Diasorin ex-Focus business, just to get a bit of a feeling of what we're looking for? And then the second question was if you could give us just an indication of where you see FX moving right now. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take the business question. As far as, if I can break it down for you, give or take, we expect to continue to see the historical trend of growth of the immunoassay, for what all we said before, in the range of 6-7%. And we expect to see the molecular business to grow around 14-15%. In light with what we have been seeing in 2016. We expect that this year in 2017, toward the second part of the year, we may see an impact coming from the European business. I'm saying we may see an impact simply because from a legal point of view, we are still negotiating with some of the distributors, ex-distributors of Focus, the takeover of the business. And so depending on this legal negotiation, we may be able to start a promotion or not around the summer, and therefore having or not having an impact in 2017 vis-a-vis the European business. As you can imagine, now all the Focus distributors are frozen. They are not developing the business, maintaining the business, simply trying to understand what to do with it, and trying to establish a value for Diasorin. But as far as the total franchise, again, as said, we expect 15% growth, mainly driven by the U.S. business.
Thank you.
And I believe your hello, Maya. The other part of your question was about our view on FX, if I got it right.
Yeah, right now, the impact that you're seeing at current spot rates, what would you see on FX coming?
So the impact we are seeing right now, you know, the impact we saw in 2016 is a negative impact on revenues by €6 million, as we said, mainly driven by the depreciation of the Chinese currency against the euro and the pound, the British pound. What I believe is important to understand is that about, as I believe we said in the past, 30-35% of our sales are denominated in the U.S. dollar, and it is the biggest currency for us. So we provided the guidance at 1.11, which is constant exchange rate over 2016. Now, if I well remember, the U.S. dollar is running at 105, 106, which means, all the rest being equal, 12 million, give or take, euro-denominated sales more for us. And if you want to go down to EBITDA, just ballpark number, say, for every dollar cent, ballpark 1 million euro. So 2 million in revenues, 1 million in EBITDA.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from Luigi De Bellis of Equita SIM. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon to everybody. Three questions for me on focus diagnostic. Could you give us an indication of the pipeline test that you should expect to launch in 2017? And could you provide a feeling on customer retention and new customer win rates for Focus as of today? And lastly, what are you seeing in the competitive environment for Focus? Thank you.
As far as the pipeline, I'm afraid you will need to wait for the Capital Market Day, but traditionally the company has had two areas in which it did operate. One, which is flu, which is, as you know, a business per se, with a very limited menu, and the company does have all the assays which are necessary to operate in that market. And then they had the infectious disease transplant products. So we expect, honestly, to continue to develop the business in the respiratory side. And so there will be, we expect to launch products like the Bordetella, the parapertussis. And we also expect to continue to develop in the area of infectious disease for women health. So Group B strep, which is in the U.S., is as you know, on the contrary to Europe, is a tremendous opportunity. Also, and not to forget, there is a sizable part of the business which has to do with the use of ASR on the platform by certain customers. So they are buying our platform as open platforms, and then they develop their own applications. Quest, for example, is a very large user of these assays, and we will continue to develop the ASR catalog. Today there are almost 40 assays available in the U.S. as ASR, and the target of the company is to launch every year four new products because of the situation of the U.S. market and the fact that customers are able and used to develop LDT. That side of the business will certainly continue with us. As far as the competition, this business, this company, this platform is one main competitor slash reference business, which is Cepheid, because as we have seen in our immunoassay business, all the very large companies, Roche, for example, they are going toward consolidation, full automation, very large platforms, mainly driven by the fact that there is an opportunity in this market for blood bank screening. There is today consolidation of blood banking and the need to provide very large platform for blood screening. So Grifols is an example with large platforms, Roche, Beckman with their own platforms. So at the end of the story, when it comes to the rest of the segment, you have completely different players. You have Cepheid, which is the elephant, and then you have Kydel, you have now us. And so we will continue to play in that segment, which is not that crowded. We are not going to plan play in the other extreme segment, which is CLIA waived. There is a big today big movement in the U.S. these days for certain molecular application, especially for influenza, following decentralization of testing, then to move from the CLIA certified to CLIA waived labs. And we are certainly not going after that path because we don't believe that the platform space is suitable for that market. So today, the for us target and the target for us is Cepheid, their business model, which is very similar to ours. And Cepheid, you know, has been bought by Beckman. We really don't know how this is going to pan out. What we see is that there is a viability of talent on the market because of this, and because there is uncertainty, and we plan to kind of use the opportunity of this change on the market to exploit that market with our platform.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
As a reminder, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question is a follow-up from Scott Bardo of Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much for taking my follow-up question. Excellent cash conversion once again from the company and delevering, if you like, or absorbing the $300 million focus business very quickly. I think when you had a similar net cash position a couple of years ago, you highlighted potential for around €1 billion in firepower to consolidate. I wonder if you can make some comments as to, firstly, do you still see that potential firepower within the organization? And secondly, your broader views on consolidation. Is there any requirement or hunger to still consolidate? Perhaps you could share some thoughts as to where you would benefit. Or is there enough within the organization to internally invest now to drive a principally organic growth story going forward? Thank you.
Scott, I think that the answer is yes and yes. The yes means that we do have, you're right, we are delevering fast. Actually, I think it was quite remarkable the fact that we paid $300 million in cash and we never had a negative net financial position. And yes, in fact, the new the company we bought does contribute to our cash generation because it's a very profitable business. And on top of that, we also need to consider that because of the structure of the acquisition, we do have created a tax shield in the range of $6 million per year, which is increasing our cash generation. So all in all, there is a commitment by the management, certainly, but also by the main shareholder to continue to look at opportunities out there, which we believe there are of different nature, either from opportunity to buy customer list and market position with non-traditional, in segments which are necessarily not traditional today, Soren, but still they can benefit from a conversion of ELISA to CLIA. And or technologies and content if it is made available at a price that makes sense. And as you said, yes, we do have cash to support this kind of acquisition. But more than cash, I think we have appetite and support by the main shareholder to do so, which is fairly, which I would say quite unique. As far as we do need to invest internally for organic growth, because I believe through this acquisition, we bought a tremendous platform. The technology that we bought, which was developed by 3M, which is a solid, reputable U.S. company, is a very powerful technology. And under Quest and Quest Wing, it was managed certainly as a profitable technology, but not strategically as something that Quest knew how to develop because it was non-core business for them. And therefore, we now are clearly in a learning phase vis-a-vis the technology. We are transferring the manufacturing of some of this technology to our own suppliers, and we are in the process of completing this by the summer. And then certainly we see endless opportunities in terms of menu development vis-a-vis this technology. We will need to strengthen our internal organization. Clear to us, we need to invest in seniority and talent because we expect growth coming from this in terms of ideas, products, and revenues. And that yes, may be a challenge for Diasorin, but we have seen this in the past. We have done this with Eliason, and we believe the company is well equipped to take upon ourselves this next challenge.
Very good, thank you. And why have you sort of doing some strategic thinking? One of the questions I get asked a lot is about the upcoming PAMA regulations and potential impact to Diasorin's business. And I guess now that you've had some experience with Focus, and particularly given that it has this exposure to lab-developed tests that you mentioned, which is in part included in these sort of PAMA regulations, what are your overriding thoughts here? Do you think that this is going to be an acceleration in pressure, or are you relatively sanguine about the future environment in North America? Thank you.
You know, if I had a clear idea of what's happening in North America, I think I could run for political office, to be honest with you. What we see today in North America is that, yes, there is one fact, and the fact is that reimbursement has been cut, and that's on the table. But by the same token, reimbursement has been cut. We do have a business which is very skewed toward the large labs. And if you listen to the way the large labs look at PAMA, they are somehow shielded by this because the percentage of the business that they do, which is associated with Medicare, is low double digit, right? Price pressure in our business does come more from competition. We have seen that with what happened to vitamin D. So do I believe PAMA or anything that will happen in the U.S. is going to dramatically change short, mid-term, and then God knows what is going to happen in 10 years. But in the next 2-3 years, I don't honestly see things changing trajectory vis-a-vis what we've been experiencing. And by the way, if you think about it, when Obamacare was announced and then everybody was excited by the fact that 20-30 million more Americans would have been all of a sudden available as potential customers, and we said, well, who knows what we will see eventually. We didn't see a significant increase in volume going funnel through the big labs. What we saw is that we saw volume in business increase whenever we were lucky to be able to participate to that because of the difficulties or the increased pressure in labs in the U.S. Quest and LabCorp are buying more and more. So consolidation of labs is supporting our business because we are today inside LabCorp, we are inside Quest, and when they grow, we grow.
Very good. I've taken enough of your time. Thank you very much for the answers.
Yes, thank you.
The next question is from Bruno Permutti of Banca IMI. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. A question related to the vitamin D in Japan. I would like to understand if it is the introduction and the first data you probably have on the sales there are in line with your expectation, or if you already got a feeling of the market, the acceptance of the market of the vitamin D there. A second question regarding Roche, if you can give us an update on the agreement and on developments, the recent developments. And lastly, if I may, if you can, on the first months, the first 2-3 months of this year, I want to understand if it is going, it is all going as expected, or if you are seeing something discontinuities during the year. I mean, you believe that if the first 2 months of the year are in substantially in line with the guidance and with the idea you have for the full year.
Okay, as you can imagine, I will not comment on how we are doing in January and February. You need to wait until the quarter results will be published, and I'm not going to make any comment vis-a-vis January and February. As far as Japan vitamin D, I think we discussed it already last year. The adoption of vitamin D in Japan is a toss of a coin. And this is why we disclosed that expectations in the budget are fairly limited. Yes, there is plenty of clinical need of vitamin D testing, but by the same token, Japan is a fairly conservative society from a medical point of view. There has been approval of another company that got vitamin D approved in Japan, which is a Japanese company. That does have an install base in the hospital setting, whereas, as we said since the beginning, we do have our Liaison Excel business in the bigger reference labs. So far, we didn't see a significant pickup of the business, but honestly, we don't know, and just wait and see, what will happen. As far as Roche is concerned, yes, we continue. We start seeing placements with Roche. There are close to 20 existing projects mainly in Europe of significant size, some of which have been awarded installed, some of which are under discussion. So we see the Roche alliance delivering to us what we expect in the very large labs, because Roche is certainly a dominating part in that space.
Thank you.
Mr. Raza, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Thank you, operator.
Goodbye. Take care.